Welcome to Headlines. This week, our guest will be Rav Moshe Heineman, the Poisek of Baltimore. He's the Rav of the Agudas Yisrael of Baltimore. He's also the Rav HaMachshir of the Star K. I don't know if you've ever met him, but you've definitely eaten products that he's the Rav HaMachshir of. He's a musmach of Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Rashke Bahag, the Poisek of America. We'll be discussing the kosher switch, or, well, it's debated whether it's the so-called kosher switch. Next week, our guest will be Rav Eitan Feiner, the famous Rav of the Five Towns, and the topic will be, does Mazel play a role in Halacha? The brilliant Rabbi Feiner, we've all heard of him, but it'd be interesting to hear him live. We will have Rabbi Yair Hoffman afterwards discussing priorities in tzedakah. We'll all be besieged. Who comes first? Is it your child's school or the fellow knocking at the door who has a daughter to marry off in Eretz Yisrael? The following week, we will have Rabbi Shlomo Fishbein, the rabbinical supervisor of the CRC, and he'll be speaking about Starbucks. Is it kosher? And even if you don't go to Starbucks, if you have a teenage child, they're definitely interested. So what can you drink at Starbucks, or maybe nothing? We'll find out. We'll be speaking to the man himself. We will also have, on a social matter, we will have probably the most prolific Jewish author alive today, to my knowledge, and if anybody knows otherwise, they can call in and or they can email us and tell me whether I have it wrong. This is a title that I'm making up. The famous Hasidic Rav and psychiatrist actually, Rabbi Abraham Twersky, and he'll be speaking about happy families and relationships. And to anybody who's just gone through a three-day Yom Tov, we know how an unhappy family can be difficult and how a happy family is important. You can listen to us on WMCA 570 or at WMCA.com. That's on Zev Brenner. Or at NachumSiegel.com. Many other radio stations carry us, but I'm not going to go through the list. You can email us at any time with questions@headlinesbook.com. So this week the topic is, I would like to mention, the last time we were on, we had a lottery, and we said whoever sends in the name of the station that they listen in, we're going to give away three winners, $100 to your local farm store or bookstore, and we had three winners. The winners of the last week's lottery were P.G. Waxman of Lakewood, New Jersey, Zalman Muchkin of Brooklyn, New York, and Moshe Schoenbrunn of Lakewood, New Jersey. So we sent you your gift certificates. Hopefully you'll use it to buy Headlines book, but you could use it for anything you'd like. Now, if you have any topics that you would like to hear us talk about or bring guests in for, send us an email at info@headlinesbook.com. That's info@headlinesbook.com. If you've missed any of the past broadcasts and it's a topic that interests you, and I've received many emails about people who ask about the sort of topics, I've received many people want to speak about shaking hands, people want to speak about gays and halacha, etc. So they're now available on podcast at our website, which is headlinesbook.com. Okay, so this week we're talking about the kosher switch, and before we bring Rabbi Heineman on, I'd like to give a brief intro as to what the kosher switch is and how it works. So the kosher switch is basically, it's a switch that would be used to turn off and on any device, including clearly a switch. And the way it works is it doesn't directly turn the electric off and on, but what it does is it's a plastic glider that goes up and down in a wall, you know, holder. But what happens is on each side of it, there is an eye and there's a beam that gets flashed intermittently every 30, 60, 90, 120 seconds. And when the beam flashes, it's a signal, the receptor accepts the signal, and it sends a signal to another device, which again will randomly send a pulse to a switch, which will then turn on the device. So the logic here is, and there's a light on top of the switch that tells you whether you can or not can't move it, because you should not move it when the pulse is coming. So here's how it works. If if the switch is down, in other words, if the plastic piece is down, and the plastic piece is not connected to anything, it's just a dumb plastic piece of plastic. If it's down, it acts as a divider between the sort of the laser that flashes and the eye that accepts the beam. So the laser, when it flashes intermittently, will hit the plastic. The eye will not get anything. And after it does not get a signal for 30, 60, or 90 seconds, it will then shut the device down. Right, but it will happen a minute or two later. It doesn't happen instantly. Alternatively, if it's down and on Yom Shabbos you were to lift it, then it would, when the beam sends its random light and it's accepted, it will turn on the device 2 minutes later. So what's the concept here? Yeah, the concept is here is you are not doing a direct action for two reasons. One reason is at the time that you are moving down the plastic piece or raising it, there's actually no beam being flashed because the light on top tells you green or red whether you can or can't divide it. So at that time, you're actually doing nothing. It's only later, let's say a minute later, that the beam tries to connect, and when it can't, it then sends a signal. So there's both a delay. So there's two issues. One is at the time you are doing nothing, and additionally, there is a delay. And that would be the reason to say that it is not a direct action, but it is something called a grumma. A grumma means on Shabbos, as well as, you know, in Nezikin, a grumma means an indirect action. Let me give you an example of a grumma. Let's say you have a dam, and there's a person downstream, let's say a mile away, and somebody were to remove the dam, and the water rushes out of the dam, and 20 minutes later, this flood of water, it was a dry bed stream, comes running down the bed stream, and knocks this person over and breaks his leg. Halachically, it's grumma b'nezikin and yepater, because it's an indirect action, and it happened a while later. Right, so there are two issues going on over here. So the first one who wrote about this was the Belza Dayan. His name is Reb Chaim Tzvi Shapira. He's the Rav of Machzike Hadas of Belz in Bnei Brak. And he wrote a heter, and he wrote it in Tufshin Ayin. So this matter, even though it's just hit the news here recently, it's actually been going on for quite a while. And basically his heter is based on the following theory. He says, the halacha is you're allowed to open up a door of your house on Shabbos, right? It's the Shulchan Aruch in a few places, but in Tavkuf Yudalot, etc. You're allowed to open up the door of your house, even though subsequently a wind will come in and it may blow out a candle that's in your house. So he says that clearly that the reason for this is because you are not blowing out the candle. You are merely opening up a door, and then the wind subsequently comes in on its own and blows out the candle. So he says, so you see from here that a grumma would be mutter, and it would not be problematic because there's both a delay, and additionally, there is something in the middle, right? So this was the first, and it's a beautifully written tshuva. And he says that it's even less than a grumma, because in a grumma, like by the dam, you're actually removing the impediment that allows the water to flow in, and the water is there at the time. Here, when you lower the switch, it's not like the light is there at the time and you're interrupting something, or you're when you raise it, you're allowing it, the light isn't even there. So he says it's even less than that. So subsequently to that, a letter came out recently, a Shabbos alert to the Flatbush community, and was signed by Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, the Rosh Yeshiva Philadelphia, Rav David Feinstein, Rav Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Belsky, Rabbi Miller, and Rabbi Reisman, and Rabbi Leaf. Four Rosh Yeshivas and two very, very, actually five Rosh Yeshivas and one very respected Rav. And they made the following comments to the kosher switch. And one was, they said that it's not a grumma. You say that it's a grumma. They say it's not a grumma. And therefore, it would not be mutter. And Rabbi Miller, in his letter, or subsequent letter, explains why it's not a grumma. And here's his logic. There's the Gemara says that you can't be Zayra on Shabbos. What does that mean? You can't winnow on Shabbos. It's one of the Lamates Melachos. In the olden days, before they had harvesters, how did they separate the chaff from the wheat? You know, today you go to the market, you eat a piece of bread. We have no clue, as city dwellers, how much work went into making a bread in the olden times. I mean, there was no problem with obesity in the olden times. So much work was 100 hours of work till you ate that piece of bread that you pop into your mouth, right? the Melechus HaPas, right? There's a whole list of the on Shabbos with us. So one of them is winnowing. A person would stand there, throw it in the air, a wind would hopefully come, separate the chaff. Imagine how backbreaking this was. So the Rush asks the question. He says, the Gemara actually says, why isn't that a grumma? He's throwing it up in the air, and then a wind comes along and separates it. So the Gemara says, Melachas Machsheves Asra Taira, a very cryptic comment. So the Rush says, you know why? He says, because a grumma is only in an action where it's incidental. Like when somebody removes a dam, right? It wasn't meant, the dam was not meant to be removed to kill somebody or hurt somebody downstream. So you did something, and incidentally, an act subsequently later came out through your actions. But he says, something that this is the way the malacha is done, this is the way it's effectuated, you don't say that other part of it that you didn't do is random, but you say that is all part of your intent. It's more than that, it's your part of your intent. It's actually, that is the form of the asiyas hamalacha. That is the form that the action is done. So he says, by winnowing, how is winnowing conventionally done? You throw it up in the air, and a wind will blow it. So he says, that's not incidental, it's not accidental, it's not a one-time event. That is the tzuras hamalacha. And halachically, this is accepted, and I'll give you a few examples. In hunting, let's say, an animal runs into a trap, right? Well, l'chaira, that's grumma, right? I mean, you didn't do anything. You set the trap. Let's say the owner of the hunter would sick dogs onto a deer or some other creature, and then he would chase the dogs, or he would sick the dogs, and they would chase it into the trap, and the trap would capture the deer by itself. So the Mishneh Berurah says that's not grumma. He says, why? That's how hunters work. They chase creatures into traps, and even though chasing is just a grumma, you just scared it, right? But that is how hunting is done. So that is not called a grumma. You don't see the fact that the trap caught it as something that's side, incidental. That is the tzuras hamalacha. Another example is in the olden days, pre-medicine, for some strange reason, it comes from Aristotle and even before that, they believed that letting blood... taking blood out of a person was a healthy thing. And, you know, for years, for thousands of years, they used to, a sick person, ironically, today we add blood. In those days, they were very backward medically, so they would remove blood. So how did they, one of the ways to take blood out of a person, bloodletting, was is they would put a leech on a person's body, and the leech would suck blood out. So the Magen Avraham says that, it's not actually the Magen Avraham, but it's the Evan Ezer says, you can't put a leech on a person's body. Why? It's a grumma. Right, the leech is doing the bloodletting, not you. But since this is the form of how removing blood was done, it's almost like the leech is a tool with which you remove the blood. So that's not called a grum anymore. The wind is the tool that you use for separation. Right, the net is the tool that you use for hunting. That's not called a grum. That is called a direct action. So Rabbi Miller, as well as many others, make the very valid point that by putting it down, that is called a direct action. So even though it's a grumma and it happens later, but this is the form of doing the malacha, that in effect would not leaves the world of grumma and becomes a direct action. So this is the debate here. And the question is, do we hold like that rush in all situations? Don't we hold that rush in all situations? Actually, this show would have to go on for hours to be able to go through it. I actually gave a chabura and shul on Shavuos by night about this topic. It went on for 4 hours, and I think we probably scratched a half of it. So, but we'll hear Rabbi Heinemann's opinions. He goes at it from a different point of view. It's extremely complex, and all I would say is, regardless of the halacha and the lack of clarity, and I'll give you an example of the lack of clarity. You know, there's a huge disagreement here, whether it's a psik reisha or not a psik reisha. which in my mind seems like the entire argument is erroneous. Because the whole question of a psikratia, whether the light flashing or not is good, is only where there is no intent. That is where psikratia makes a difference. Here there is clearly intent. So, but in general, the entire argument, and I think Rabbi Belsky captured in his letter very, very succinctly, is, in my opinion, it's, you know, we can find machinations to basically almost avoid the entire Torah. And the Ramban calls that a concept of menuvel b'rishus ha-Torah. You know, they used to say, about a person who would walk in Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos, he would go pachas pachas midal adamis, without Natilas Yadayim, and without a yarmulke on his head, because less than Dal Adamas doesn't count, and Shabbos Pachas B'Dal Adamas doesn't count, and you don't need Pachas Dal Adamas for Natilas Yadayim. I mean, there are machinations how we can get around almost everything. But ultimately, Ramosha Feinstein said, it's interestingly, when Shabbos clocks came out, he said, the concept of Amira La'akam was because a person, through Amir al-Akam, could go to work, turn on his computer, have all his letters typed, transact, you know, trade on the stock market, if it was Yom Tov and Shabbos, it's closed, but basically run his entire life. And that is a desecration of Shabbos. Ramesh said, all these implementations basically fall under the rubric, and Ramesh writes this in his tshuvas, of Amir al-Akam. So, regardless of the halacha, whether the Belzerov is right or wrong, or whether, you know, these Rashivas, I think that, you know, if the kosher switch were accepted, they'll make a kosher switch for a car, and a kosher switch for a plane, kosher switch for computers, a kosher switch for stock trading. What would happen to Shabbos? And remember, like Ramosha writes in his tshuva, Yosemi Masha Klal Yisrael Shamaras HaShabbos, Shabbos Shamaras Yisrael. So, regardless of the halach, I find this to be really a very difficult and objectionable. The whole concept that the Shabbos is something that is difficult to, and anybody who's kept the Shabbos knows how beautiful the Shabbos is, but that's more of an ethical and moral debate rather than a halachic debate. So we have the great Gaon Rabbi Heinemann on the line. Let's bring on Rabbi Heinemann.
Rabbi Heinemann, what is your opinion of the kosher switch?
You mean the so-called kosher switch?
The so-called kosher switch.
Right. I say that it is nothing more than a grammar, and it's asa midrabanan.
Okay, but the manufacturers of the kosher switch are saying that it's less than a grammar, because all you're doing is you're taking away something that's interfering, and you're not actually doing, you're never touching anything that actually causes a maisa. And to give as an example, if somebody opens the door and wind comes in subsequently, the Shulchan Aruch seems to apply that it's muta because you're just removing a disturbance from the middle. What's wrong with their analysis?
Well, we look at it the way that it seems to us. We don't look at what actually is happening. That's not important. If you have two letters in a Sefer Torah that seem to be touching, but with a magnifying glass you can see that they're not actually touching, the Sefer Torah is not kosher. On the other hand, if the two letters don't seem to be touching, and with a magnifying glass you see that they are touching, it is kosher. Because we go according to the way that it seems, the way that we can understand something with our normal five senses, which the Baruch Hu gave us. So over here, this switch, you move something, and the light goes on a few seconds later. So it doesn't matter what the electronic way of doing it is. You do an action, and the light goes on later. That's all. It's just a delay. I think maybe I can explain it better with there's some tshuvas from Moshe Feinstein, three consecutive tshuvas. In one, he discusses the question about whether you could fulfill the obligation of Havdalah or Megillah over the phone. Someone is confined to the house, can't go to a minyan. Can you just call him up and read the Megillah for him? So the Ramosha says it depends on the question, what does the phone do? Does the phone pull the voice into the receiver? Or does it is it reconstituted in the receiver? And is it a new voice, or is the old voice which is being pulled through the wires? So Ramosha Feinstein says that it's more likely, it's more easy to believe that it pulls the voice through the wires, because it sounds exactly the same way the person's speaking. So therefore, you could do it. Then the next two is, can you speak to someone? Can you be to the Megillah over a microphone? So he says, of course not. How can you be? It says it's. There's no way that you could do that. It is considered you making a new sound on Shabbos. It's awesome, and maybe Minat Torah, maybe Rabbanan, make a new sound. The speaker makes a new sound. Next Jew, can you speak to someone with a hearing aid? He says that it depends on the same question. Are you making a new sound, or are you just pulling the sound from the person's voice into your ear? He said he spoke to various professionals, and they didn't have a clear answer. He says it's more mistaken that it pulls the sound, because you can, it sounds exactly like the person's talking, and therefore it is it's permitted to speak to one Shabbos. Okay, so Ramosha Feinstein understood that he was a very smart person. He understood exactly what's happening over here. It doesn't matter what's happening. It's the way that we perceive it. Just like it says, we're allowed to eat cheese, even though they're made with bacteria, and we don't have to shech the bacteria. We don't. We don't see them. You don't see them from a halacha standpoint. They're not there. So the question is, with our five senses, how do we understand that a telephone works? It says so. It sounds like the person talking. So it doesn't sound like it's a new sound. It sounds like it's pulling the old sound. So we can go with that. According to the Torah, we can go with that. When it comes to a loudspeaker, sounds much louder than what the person is speaking. So it must be a new sound. When it comes to a hearing aid, it's the same question as a telephone. When he said he spoke to various professionals about this, what he probably asked them was, can you actually tell that the sound you're hearing through the hearing aid is not the same as the sound of the person who's talking? And so, no, that's not a yes or no answer. It's maybe very slightly, maybe doesn't vary. So anyway, so he said it sounds pretty much the same, and therefore we can assume that it just pulls the sound, and therefore it is considered, you're allowed to speak to someone with a hearing aid, not considered making a new sound. Okay, so that being said, over here, you flip a piece of plastic, and the light goes on a few seconds later. So we don't know. The way we see it is that this has caused something to move a few seconds later. And therefore, it's the regular grama, and grama is also midrabanan, and it's only mutter, but makom pseder, like in case of a fire, then it's mutter. There are some people who may be makel in other cases of a big causal loss, if it's not a fire, but just as regularly is definitely awesome, Rabbanan.
So let me ask you what I mean on Yom Tif, when grama is mutter, and you don't need the makom pseder on Yom Tif, would the kosher switch be mutter on Yom Tif?
I believe yes, but it's halacha vein merim kain.
Why would it be Ein Moirin Kane?
Because people are not used to understanding that.
Let me ask you, if they re-engineered the kosher switch so that the delay was not 2 seconds, but it was 5 minutes later, or 10 minutes later, or an hour later, would it be mutter then?
We do the same thing. But they would not make it an hour later. It wouldn't have too many practical applications.
Let's say 10 minutes later.
Yes. No, it would be the same thing.
It would be asr or mutter?
It would be like every grammar, that for Makom Seder would be mutter, according to Ramah, and soon she went out.
So, how is this different than the case in the Shulchan Aruch when you open a door and there's a candle behind the door and a few minutes later a wind comes in and blows it out? Why would that be mutter, in this case be asa?
Okay, so really, in the if you use a prevailing source of energy which doesn't come from you, and it helps you do a malacha, it's asam in HaTorah. We learn that from the din of Zora. That's not Zoraya, it's with the hay at the end. Basically, winnowing. All you do is, after you've loosened the chaff from the wheat kernels, and you throw it up into the wind, and the wind blows off the chaff, and the kernels fall down, so you've separated it, even though you just threw it up and it comes down. But since there is a wind blowing, so it's considered it's considered as you have done it. Similarly, if you have a motor, a grinder, let's say, that's it's on. There's nothing in it, and you put meat into it on Shabbos, even though the grinding action is you was there from before, but there's just nothing to grind. It's considered as if you have done it. And it's chayiv chatas. I mean, it's a regular malacha. Now, if the prevailing force is not there at the time, only comes there later, then we don't say that you've done this in a way which you're using the energy force that was there from before, because it didn't come. It only came at a different time. So there, we don't have the limud of Zora, and so therefore it's permitted. It's only said when there's a different force which is actually doing the malacha. Here, basically, it looks like you're doing the malacha when you put on the, because you put on the switch. So that's why it's different.
And you're saying it's darker, the kach. It's like, it would be like klavim, like being tzad, or by the same idea, that this is the way to do the malacha.
I didn't say that. But you see, there's certain malachas, let's say when you bake. So you put something into the oven, into a heated oven. It doesn't bake right away. Or you cook something, it doesn't cook right away. It first cooks after a certain period of time. But that is darka b'kach, and that's the malacha of cooking or baking. So then it doesn't help if it happens later. It's not considered grammar. That's considered how you do it. When you plant something on Shabbos, it doesn't grow until 10 days later, or however long it takes to grow. But that's considered the malacha of planting, because that's the way that it's done. So there is dark bekach, it doesn't help if it happens later. But over here, when you put on the switch, it is a grama. I'm not saying that it's awesome in HaTorah, because it's dark of a kach. I believe it's only Osman Rabbanan, because it doesn't happen right away, because the normal way you put on light, you put on the switch and it goes on right, it does go on right away. So that's not the way that it normally is, but I'm saying that it's just a grammar. You just delay the action, and the grammar is Osman Rabbanan.
Now, Rabbi Hanuman, would you allow it in a hospital or a nursing home or any place else where they would have to be at Rimalach? Like for a chayla?
I believe that for a chayla it would be permitted. But what's considered a chayla, what's not considered a chayla, each case would have to evaluate it at a different time. You know, some people are in a hospital for observation. So it's not considered a chayla. I mean, I wouldn't give it a blank check that it's been in a hospital. But if someone who's sick, even though it's not a chayshesh but sakana, he's a chayla called gufay. It's enough to permit this, yes.
Rabbi Heinemann, is the svara that you said before, that something that's not near, you have to look at it, what's near a lion, is that the basis of the oven, the Shabbos oven?
it is something that is, yes, in a certain way, that let me say this. The Shabbos oven, it has nothing to do with this. But there's on Yontif, there's an added feature which I added into it that you can actually change the temperature. And it works with a grommet based on the Mishnah Berurah that grommet is mut on Yontif. And the reason why it's not considered you're doing something right away, because really you send a message to the computer, and the computer really tells whatever should happen after 10 seconds or whenever it's going to happen. So that message, since it's not possible for a person with five senses to recognize anything has happened, is not considered you doing anything right away. In that, but the rest of this of the Sabbath mode, which is used on Yontif, that has nothing to do with this. You don't have to use this. You don't have to change if you don't want. But you must put it into the Sabbath mode on Yontif, because otherwise you can't use it. So when you open the door, the light will go on. When you close it, the light will go off. There's going to be different readouts when you open up the oven or you close the oven. And there are other problems over here, which it must be in the Sabbath mode on Yontif in order to be able to use it. If you want to use this feature, fine. Don't want to use it, so that's also fine.
So Rabbi Heinemann, would it be fair? What would be the halacha if somebody would want to type on their computer on Yontif, if their screen was off, and the typing would only be would not be seen until after Yontif? Would that be mutter?
It might be considered, Tikkun Mona, it might be considered that you've made something now that can be used at a later date. But let me tell you something which I believe is very similar, and I spoke, and that is with the water meters. We have water meters in Baltimore. They put in new meters that they don't have to get someone to check the meters, but the meters sends a signal. There's a digital display, and it sends a signal to the central system computer, and then when they want to send you a bill, it will automatically print out your bill. If there's a problem, they can bring up the numbers you've used on their computer, because it's all in the memory. And so this is a big problem for Shabbos. So we were able to get an agreement with the city that these digital water meters will not have a display. They have no display. But they said that they need a display. So we say, well, let's make a cover over the display. Why they need a display? They need a display because in case there's a problem with it, they have to be able to check out if it's working, if it's not working. So I said, make a cover over the display. The display will not show, but when you open the cover, it will show. So they said, well, when it's closed, you can't see it. Anyway, I said, that doesn't help us. If it's there, we can't use the water. But they should not show anything. When you open up, it'll show a display. So they said, they don't water half a million meters, so it doesn't really make any difference. And they had no problem to change that. Okay, but there was still a problem that they're sending a message to the computer. So I went to Chaim Kanievsky and asked him what he thinks about, if he thinks that's a problem. Because according to what I had just mentioned before, I didn't think it was a problem because you can't see anything, and you can't you feel anything, you can't smell anything, you can't taste anything. So there's nothing that we can notice with our five senses. So I thought it was no problem. So I asked Chaim Kanievsky. He said, "Exactly, no problem." He said he doesn't see any problem with this.
Isn't there a different issue that is? L'chayra, the ksav that's on the meter is ksav she'enim eskayim, which would be malacha drabanan.
Yes,
right?
It actually isn't eskayim. I don't. The only reason why it's not eskayim is because you keep on using the water. But if you were
right, so it keeps changing. So well, but it's also
it's
electric.
It's like you've nothing noticeable. Now, if you have, for instance, if you have a So a lot of places have for security systems, let's say in a shul. And so there's cameras, and it gets recorded onto either a computer, just a computer, and you can bring it back at a later date if you want, or if it is a, or maybe on a monitor. Now, if it's on a monitor, it's maybe considered writing. As a matter of fact, I spoke to Yashiv Zeil Tavroch about this. If you're allowed to walk in front of a camera, and he said, "Well, what happens if you would stand in front of the camera? Would the cameras? Would the monitors keep your picture? Would it stay on?" I thought it would. It seemed to him that if you put the monitor off, if it automatically would go off, it's set to go off, it would not be considered a ksiva deraisa. And in such a case, since you're not really intending that your image should be on it, so that he would be a mekel. I believe that was the problem with the people going to the kessel on Shabbos.
Right.
There were cameras over there for security reasons. So he said later that they worked out a deal with the people that it would be okay. What I think they did was, they had more than one camera over there. What they did is that the camera goes off automatically, like every 10 hours for a minute, and then and that's why he said it was permitted. But if the monitor is on, he did have a problem with it. Unless he said it was EF, Shevin Yenacha.
Okay, so Rabbi Heinemann, the bottom line is you believe that it's a real grama. It would be usher on Shabbos midrabanim, unless it's b'makom seida. On Yom Tov, it could possibly be mutta, but you wouldn't allow it as halacha vein meirin kain because of the fact that a michshol would come out of it.
Yes, and I think it may be considered like dorm asur machem naik behem. Dorm utar machem naik behem issa, then you shouldn't be matterit.
Well, thank you very much, Rabbi Heinemann. It was a big honor to have you on our program.
So, thank you very much. For those who are joining us, that was Harav HaGoyin Rav Moshe Heinemann, the Dayan of Baltimore, the head of the Agudas Yisrael, and the Rav HaMachshir of the Star K. We've all eaten something from the Star K because, you know, the OU uses the Star, every Hechsher uses each other, so... Whether we know it or not, we're Simech and Rabbi Moshe Heinemann, and that was a fast. He's also a beautiful, humble person. You could see from when I called him a Rav HaGoyin, how he protested. So, for those who are listening to us on the Nachum Segal Network or on the yeshivanet.com, heard Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson speak about narcissism and this week's parasha, and I would like to pick up that theme a little bit. He spoke about how the Nazir was the narcissist, and you know how 2,000 years ago, you know, Greek mythology starts speaking about the story of Narcissus, you know, the famous painting by Caravaggio, looking into the Narcissus was a beautiful Greek youth in mythology, and he looked into the water, and he was so entranced with his own image. Taltaloisa of Shchayrim, he just stared and stared and stared until he starved to death. It's basically the person who's so in love with themselves that they basically close off the entire world. And, you know, it's not a myth, but we all know narcissists. Narcissists are those people who don't see anybody else. We all have it in us a little bit. In fact, I'll tell you that I was at a simcha a number of years ago, and I saw her, Moshe Shapiro, the great, you know, the Rav from Eretz Yisrael, Rosh Hashiva, and it was before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I said, Moshe, is there any Makayr in the Torah that we have to love ourselves or forgive ourselves? And the reason that's so important is because, you know, we all forgive. We forgive this one, we forgive that one, we ask the Rabbeinu Shalom for forgiveness. How many people really forgive themselves? And it was a time in my life that it was very important because it was post-07 when the big meltdown happened. And, you know, when I'm not on the radio and I'm not learning, I actually work 9 to 5, and I work very hard 9 to 5. It's usually not 9 to 5, but it's something like 8 to 6 or 8 to 7 many days. And it was... And, you know, it was a meltdown. The world was melting. And, you know, and what will you do? You look back and you say, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I did this. And I can't believe I bought that. And I can't. This was such a bad decision. And so many people, we go through lives and we're always looking in the rearview mirror and eating ourselves up. So I said, is there a mitzvah to forgive yourselves or to love yourself? And he thought and he said, I don't know of a mitzvah to love yourself or to forgive yourself. And it was a few years later and it hit me. I said, you know, it says, "V'ahavta l'reyecha kamecha." Love your neighbor like you love yourself. And how could, just think of this. You have to ask a favor from two people. One person is happy with himself. He loves himself. He feels so fulfilled. He thinks life is wonderful. He's happy. He has children. He's married. He has a job. He's earning a living. He's paying his bills or not paying his bills. He's happy with who he is. The other person is just unhappy. He's verbittert. He just is angry at himself. He says, why did I do this? And how did I do this? And I didn't meet my this. And I'm Now, you have to ask this bitter, angry, self-hating person a favor, or alternatively, you have to ask yourself, who would you ask the favor from? Well, you go to the happy person. Well, he's expansive. He's so free. Then you go to the bitter, angry person. What is he going to say? Like, the attitude is, I'm just so angry. What do you want from me? Even if he's angry at himself. So, v'ahavta l'reyecha has to be kamecha, love your neighbor. But where does it all start? I mean, the seed of it all, the seed, S-E-E-D, and also the seat, S-E-A-T, of it all starts in your own heart. So if we have to love our neighbor, we certainly, it starts with the love of ours. If we have to forgive somebody else, we have to forgive ourselves too first. So it all starts with, we are ultimately, B'Tselem Elokim, we are the God of our own surroundings. Right? Like the Nefesh HaChaim says, we create everything around us, so we have to be happy with ourselves. So narcissism on some level is important. We have to love ourselves. But the narcissist is the person who's taking it on steroids. He sees nothing but himself. So if you go just to the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the whole Torah is really after Bereishis, as about Moshe Rabbeinu. So go to Yetzias Mitzrayim and think of it. Who are the two, if this was a play, who are the two protagonists in Yetzias Mitzrayim? Who are the stars? Who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? Who are the two main players? Well, it's Moshe Rabbeinu. And standing Moshe Rabbeinu is Paro. So let's look at Moshe and Paro. And what do we know about their character? Well, what's the first time we see Paro? The first time we see Paro is through the eyes of Yosef, that white Apare. And what happens? Pare, living in his luxurious palace, he has a vintner, a full-time wine cellar, he stocks it, he makes it, and sometime between pouring the goblet and handing it to Pare, a flea flies in. And the Pare says, off with his head. Now, could you imagine at home, we all have somebody who helps clean this and that, somebody who accidentally drops a glass and we say, kill her or kill him. It's so foreign to us, it wouldn't even make a joke, right? We understand what humanity is. Being human is all about making errors, living with the fallible, living with the imperfection. Pare, somebody who makes an error in my presence, kill him. The baker, he makes brioches, babkes, cakes, every delicacy to please this hedonistic king. In one of the cakes, there's a grain of wheat that has gotten in that has not been ground. Remember, in those days, they didn't use great harvesters and wasn't electronic. It was all done by hand. A grain of wheat got in, and Pari got offended. And what does he say? A grain of wheat in my pastry? I don't care if you've been my baker for 10 years. Off with your head. That's narcissism, would you say? Like taking a little bit too do a thing. Now, let's see. Now, maybe it's only with his workers. Maybe with his family, Pari was maybe really much more, you know, humane. He was, you know, like in one of those Italian, you know, things, you know, you shoot everybody, but maybe with your family, who knows? He was so kind and, you know, by the way, I don't mean to say anything against the Italians. My great-grandfather, we come from Italy, from many of us do, et cetera, right? Just using it as a metaphor, the way it's used in literature. So how is he with his family? Well, Chazal say, Sarfen al hamalachim, with his possessions and his family. When Pari died, take this one, they buried him with his possessions, but not only with his possessions, with his wives too. They were put alive, put into the grave together with the Pari to die. Because when he's gone, it's all over. There's nothing else but him. By the way, a lot of sociopaths are this way. Saddam Hussein, this fellow from Korea who just killed his uncle or somebody because he fell asleep during one of his speeches. So we had him executed using anti-aircraft guns. You fell asleep during my speech? So these are people on stairs. Now, amazingly, this I'm telling you about extremes. But we all know, by the way, narcissists. Narcissist is that person who just, you know, looks at himself in the mirror, only sees himself, you know, the Trumps of this world. They get up, they only see, you know, their needs, their desires, their ambitions, their ego. They just don't see the other person. Again, and this is, you know, to have it to an excess. So narcissism is very alive. We're not just talking about some mythological thing. Psychologists will tell you that 50% of the people they see suffer from narcissism. So how is so that's how Pari was with his workers. We know how he was with his family. Now, how is he with Kav Yachal, with God? So what's the we see Pari in his dream, v'hinehu oimid al ha'yer, the dream he says to Yosef, he's oimid al ha'yer, so what does the pasuk say in Yecheskel? Li ya'ori v'ani asisini, it's my Nile, I created you, I am a god. Pari thinks he's God. I know people, by the way, who are not much different than Pari. I work in financial services and, you know, in the investment business. So I meet a lot of hedge fund managers. Many of them are very successful and, you know, they have their private yachts and their private planes and they have staffs waiting on them and it goes to their head in a hurry. Let me tell you. So I know this hedge fund manager. So this is the story they say. So he doesn't get along with anybody. I mean, he has a real complex. He yells and screams. So his wife isn't getting along with him. His kids aren't getting along with him. Forget about his workers. So he goes to a psychologist. And the psychologist says, so why are you here? So he says, well, I'm here. You know, when I was fighting with my wife about the reason why my kids were, I was, threw my kid out of the house when, but that had to do with the worker who I fired. So the psychologist said, wait, start at the beginning. The guy says, the beginning? Okay, I'll start at the beginning. In the beginning, I created heaven and earth. Right? So we know people like that, real people who really have what they call a God complex. Everything revolves around them. So the first, we see Pari, it's my, I created you, my wife is buried with me, if you work for me, you make a mistake, it heads off. How is Pari with his people? The people who put him in power, right? Well, what happens by the Makis? The Arbek come, eats every, you have blood, nothing, I don't care about you. All the Makis, everything's eaten. Well, guess what? I have my private store. This animal, I have my private, you know, stock in the basement. It's not going to bother me. Animals marauding through doesn't bother me. Only one time is Pari touched. Once. The entire thing is he touched. When is that? Makas Becheiris. Killing the firstborn. Pari was the firstborn. It's always the firstborn who takes over the Pharaoh, the leadership. Oh my goodness, it's related to me. He comes running to Moshe in middle of the night. This is the narcissist, only sees himself. Look, compare that to Moshe. What's the first visage we have of Moshe? He goes out, this princeling child, and he sees Ish Mitzri, Maka Ish Ivri. And what does he say? a slave, dirty. Compare this to the Saraifim, who was a prince. This is a nothing. This is a slave, and he's being beaten. And what does Moshe say? Russia. I'm sorry, he says, V'yitmeneu b'chayil, he kills him. And the next day, he says, to ish ivrim, what does he say? Russia lama atasakariach, evil one, why are you smiting another person? Why are you hitting another person? He is touched. And what is when he sees them carrying bricks, what does Chazal say? He says, I wish I could carry your bricks for you. He saw the sneh burning. Chazal say, what does the sneh represent? The sneh represents pain. It represents Klal Yisrael b'tzara. And he said, Asura na v'era. So Chazal say, there were many Rayim with him. There were many other shepherds. None did anything. You know, last week we had an organization in our house called Pillars. It's Yisaimim. People who, they go through terrible, people who've lost their parents, children. So they have leaders who come in and they work with them and they help them through such an incredibly difficult time in their life. And they do it all for free. And I spoke in front of the volunteers, and the same thing goes for Hatzalah volunteers, who should be heroes in our community. They're really Talmidim of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Chazal say, why was Moshe great? Because he said, Asura Naver, I'm going to see this visage of Klal Yisrael in pain, and I'm going to turn towards it. You know, it says he saw and the other Rayim didn't see. Well, if they didn't see, why? It says, because he turned to see it, he was zeicha to be a man of Yisrael. He was zeicha to leadership. Well, if the others didn't see it, why was he zeicha? So I think the Pshat and the Medrash is, they all saw it. But some people see somebody else in pain and they say, such a sad thing. Could you please pass me a cheese Danish for my coffee? And another person sees somebody in pain and he says, I'm going to do something. And that's our Hatzalah member. That's people who run organizations like Pillars and Reif Yechalim Cancer Society. These are the people who say, it's not tzatzatza, I'm going to do what Moshe did. And this is the opposite of narcissism. And let me tell you a few stories. Everybody knows there's a great mashkiach in Lakewood, Rabbi Solomon, and David Pelkowitz told me this story. He helps a lot of people. He's a tzaddik of himself. And he said an almana came to him, and he told him this most amazing story. He said that she came to Rabbi Solomon. She had lost her husband, and she came with her son. And Rabbi Solomon, the very busy Rabbi Solomon, who has thousands and thousands of people trying to get into him, and he says, shiurim for yeshiva that has 7,000 people in it. And he's a world. So the Salmana comes with her son, and he sees this boy is very sad. So Rabbi Solomon looks at him, and he says, you know, let me tell you something. I lost my father, too, when I was a little boy. So let's me and you make a club. He pulls out an index card, and he says, we're going to make the No Dads Club. Because both of us didn't have dads. And he writes down on the index card, Mattis Solomon, co-president. Simon, with the boy's last name, co-president. Then he writes down, here's my phone number of my home. Tells the boy, this is the card. You have to be a member of the club, you have to have this card. You can call me anytime you're sad. I know when I lost my father, I was often very sad. He said, if I'm home, because I travel, I will come to the phone, and I will speak to you, because I know what it's like. And the mother said, you know what? She said, he carries this card wherever he goes. You know, let me share with you a story. Some say this story with Ramesha Labiana. It's a beautiful story. There was a very Erlich Yid, very religious, pious person. He came to Ramesha Labiana and he said, I really want to see Eliyahu Hanavi. It's been my dream my whole life to see an angel. I want to see Elijah the prophet. Now, Ramesha Labiana was a very holy person. But to see an angel, let's face it, you know, not everybody gets to see Eliyahu Hanavi. You know, very few people were ever zeichet to see Eliyahu Hanavi. So he put his head down and he wanted to help this person, and he thought for a few minutes and he said, you know, I have an idea for you. There's a family down the here and here in this corner of this block. The father's been unemployed now for already a year and a half. They don't have what to eat. Rosh Hashanah is coming. Bring them a huge box before Yom Tov. with everything they need, literally for a week of food, fish and challah and wine, whatever. And the morning Erev Yom Tov, when they don't think they're going to have any food, ring on the doorbell. And when somebody comes to the door, say, it's for Yom Tov, and then run away. Maybe you'll be Zeicher. So the guy does it. He comes to the door and he leaves it. And lady comes, he drops it, he says, it's for Yom Tov, and he runs away. He davens that Rosh Hashanah. He was hoping for sure that night. Nothing happens. Yom Kippur again, nothing. He comes back to Ramesh. Ramesh Lubiana thinks again. He says, listen, do it again. Sukkot is coming. Knock on the door. Come with 2 weeks of food. Knock on the door and then run away. Does the same thing. The whole Sukkot, every time there's a knock on the door, he goes running to the door. This person, maybe the angel is there. Maybe Elio and Avi is there. It's nothing. It's the next door neighbor. It's somebody coming to play with the kids. It's the babysitter. It's the bill collector. So he goes. He's so sad. Ramesh Lubiana said, you know what? It's before Hanukkah. Do it one more time. Maybe it'll help. Just try it one last time. So it's before Hanukkah. And he said, this time take not only food, but presents for the kids for Yom Tov. Take 4 boxes. They haven't had presents, these poor little kids. The father's been out of work now almost 2 years. You know. So the guy goes ahead and he buys presents for the kids and food. And Erev Hanukkah, he knocks on the door. And a woman comes and he says, here, for Yom Tov. And the lady looks at him and she screams to her family. She says, Elio Navi is here, fist! The angel is here, and he ran away. So the guy comes back to Ramesh Lubiana and he tells him the story. And Ramesh Lubiana puts his holy head down and he says, listen, I couldn't bring Elio Navi to you, but I did something much better. I turned you into an angel. I made you Elio Navi. So we have the narcissist, we have Parai, who was buried with his wives, and we have Moshe, the prince, who said, I would die for you. I would give you my limbs. Okay, so next week we will be having Rabbi Eitan Feiner, and the topic will be, does Mazel play a role in Halacha? And he is the most charismatic, brilliant, really Loi Alman Yisrael when we have Rabbanim like this. We will have Rabbi Yair Hoffman speaking about a very important topic to all of us, priorities in tzedakah. We're besieged every day. Well, what do we do? Who comes first? So again, you can listen to us again next week. We're on WMCA 570 or at WMCA.com or at the Nachum Segal Network, NachumSegal.com, the Zev Brenner Network. We're on YeshivaNet.com. We're in a number of different places. By the way, we will also be having a very big guest in 2 weeks from now. We will have the most prolific Jewish author, to my knowledge, Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky, the noted psychiatrist. He's going to be speaking about happy families and relationships. And anybody who's just gone through a 3-day Yom Tov knows how important it is, because it could have been very unhappy if locked up in a 3-day Yom Tov. So we're good. It's a big honor to have him. I've read many of his books. I found them fascinating. Thank you so much for listening to us. I look forward to speaking to you again next week. Kol Tov.